Hi, the Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs. Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya has 144 tons of gold.
Welcome, welcome. Greetings. Welcome to Tando Radio Show. Today is March the 6th. Tuesday, March the 6th, 2017, on the Gregorian calendar, on the solar comedic calendar, it's the year 6118, and on the sidereal calendar, it's the year 417, since the last heliacal rising of Sirius. Thanks for joining us on Tando. David's unable to be with us today, so myself, Ross, and Jenna, actually, we are taking over the hosting duties today. Peace to Scotty. Thanks to all the callers and listeners for being with us today this Tuesday evening. Jen will be coming in a little bit later, so I'm just going to get
started. Okay, cool. Before you even get started, though, go on and hit them with the disclaimer.
Absolutely. We just want to, again, just touch on the fact that this station was created by us in the form of Scotty Reed and whoever else worked with him to get it started, but Scotty's the dude who got it done. And by us, for us, and this is a platform for us to learn from one another, help to provide information that's useful to our people, and to have positive interactions with each other. And this is not a platform to practice any forms of anti-blackness. This is a platform for us to try and help our people the best way we can and the best way we know how, by providing pertinent information that can potentially help other people or even save their lives. It all depends on the context of that information and how they utilize it. So thanks for being with us. So just want to make sure that disclaimer has been put out there. And again, thanks for being with us on Tando today. We're going to jump right into it. First, before doing so, I just wanted to say, please continue to support Black Talk Radio Network. You can actually donate via the Black Talk Radio Network website, as well as joining BTR Community for $24 a year. Essentially, BTR Community is a social media site where you can basically facilitate all of your social media activities without being data mined, without having your name and identity sold to anyone, without the probability of any negative repercussions for the things that you might post or for any thoughts and ideas that you might propagate. It's a site where you can put up information regarding your business if you wanted to let people know about your business, if there's any events that you think are pertinent to the melanated community of the United States, then you can also put that information there. Actually, you can put, it doesn't matter where you're from, anybody can post there. But ultimately, you know, you can just post anything that you, that any events that are coming up that you want people to know about, as well as any information about the things that you might be doing or people that you know are doing that are helpful to the to our community, pretty much. So please join us for $24 a year. Also, I would say those who listen to the platform, to the site, I mean to the platform, if everyone could donate at least $1, literally, if we can do that once a month, that'll be able to help Scotty be able to facilitate adding other attributes to the BTR community website that'll make it even more user-friendly. It's already super user-friendly, but there's other little benefits that will come if we're able to get the proper funding to facilitate adding those things. So let's support. Also, just like I said, support Black Talk Radio Network so this platform can continue to thrive and flourish and provide that information. Like Dave always says, you know, those who listen, you're picking the fruit. Now it's time to feed the roots. And I like that. I think that's really great. And, I just think that that's something that's extremely important, especially if you're getting constructive information via the different hosts of the different radio programs and also the listeners that call in to contribute their knowledge and information as we discuss different topics. So, yes, that is basically what I wanted to say first. Jenna.
Yes, and also not just your knowledge, because I know some people separate their views from the knowledge that they have, but you get your views from the knowledge that you have, and that's how you articulate them. So we appreciate your views also. You know, excuse me, everybody's not going to be right in somebody's eyes, but that's not what we're here for. We're here to share what we feel and what we think, and believe it or not, whatever you feel and what you think is always a blessing to somebody else. It allows them to get a different point of view and allows mm-hmm. you to open yourself up to receive new information. So not only the what you may think of as your intelligence that you're sharing, but just your point of view is also it's critical in this fight to end slavery and racism, white supremacy. Let's go ahead with some of these articles. I see that Brother Thomas has put up some very lovely articles, and you have gotten into a few. What I want to do before we get started is, because I didn't have that many, so I would like to go ahead and jump right on into it with the president of China and how Donald Trump has got this silent love affair with how he's trying to become officially the dictator for life. I think that's very interesting, because we have a president in office right now that wants to... Yes.
Excuse me for interjecting. I need to step away for like 2 minutes and I'll be right back, okay? So just hold it down and then I'm going to pick up where you are or where you left off when I return.
No worries. You handle it. I know you have something to do with your wife, so... You know, we're going to get into that, so...
No problem. I'll be right back.
But, yeah, he has this love affair with the president of China. And I think it's very interesting, because we have consistently talked about how he's working on dictatorship, narcissism, and all of that. And for whatever odd reason, the people who voted for him don't see it. They see it as something that they can laugh at. And it's getting time and time again to where he's just showing what his true colors are. Now, we've already known this, But yet and still, he does these strange actions, and people like to place it like he's a child, you know, just looking at it from the standpoint where he's just talking. No, people in those type of positions don't just talk. When they say things, they mean them. And they do it for a reason. So I think that's very important that we discuss that. Now let me try to go find this article. I can't, for whatever reason, it's not showing up. But anyhow, I know Brother Roz got him set up. So let me just run through some of the other excuse me. Let me run through some of the other articles that I thought was important. Korea, North Korea has stated that they feel no need for nuclear weapons if it has security guaranteed. Now I think that's very important for us to pay attention to. And I would like to actually read a little bit of this article just to give you a little context. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un says that it has no reason to possess nuclear weapons if it has a security guarantee. Seoul has confirmed, according to AP and Yonhap news agencies. North Korea also pledged to freeze its nuclear missile activities if it holds talks with the U.S. and excuse me for butchering this name. Pyongyang and Seoul agreed to bilateral negotiations scheduled for next month. South Korean President Moon Jae-in, top security advisor, said, as quoted by Yonhap news agency, the leaders of both countries are expected to attend. The gathering will be held at Paljong in a demilitarized zone 53 kilometers north of Seoul, Chung said. The South and the North have agreed to set up a hotline between their leaders to allow close consultations and a reduction of military tension, while also agreeing to hold the first phone conversation before the third South-North summit, he added. The summit will be the third in the history of the split nation. Early on Tuesday, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un hosted a dinner with the delegation from Seoul, which, according to state media, proceeded in a sincere atmosphere. So I'm gonna just leave that right there. This article is also in a BTR community up on the Foundational Radio, if you would like to read the rest of it. And it comes to you from RT News. I thought that was very, 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 very significant with the things that's going on today.
I have a comment on that, Jenna. This is Scotty.
Yes, sir. Go ahead. Most definitely.
Greetings to you and the listeners this evening. And I just want to thank you and Ross for filling in for Dave on short notice. So that we can have a broadcast of Tando Radio Show today. My thoughts on that is, to North Korea, don't trust the USA, because they gave those same guarantees to Libya, and look at Libya now. That's my comment.
Yo, I was just finna say the same thing, Scotty. You hit the nail right on the head. You know, and as much as I particularly, as well as many others, including everybody here on Tando, do not, and I repeat, do not want to be hit by a nuclear missile, I'm in a position, I probably would say the same thing, just for the world view, but I wouldn't stop working on my missiles. To be honest, I would have never put it out there that I was working on my missiles to begin with. But I also understand the threat that needs to be made to keep people up off of you. It's we can correlate this to a bully in school. You know, let's say you have a bully, a fifth grader, attacking a third grader, and that third grader begins to bring like a little slapstick. He may or he may not use it, but we know one thing for sure is that that fifth grader, once he knows that that slapstick is in the possession of that third grader that he constantly is attacking, after he finds that out, he will no longer pursue that. Now, he may talk crazy to them, but he will no longer be actually trying to get within arm's reach of that slapstick. And I think that's what North Korea has done. And like you said, I would not trust it whatsoever, because we always have to remember the United States has already dropped a bomb on Korea. We have to keep that in context. When we listen to the U.S. talk about don't nobody needs to have nuclear weapons or what have you, the only people that we know of, you know, now we can go back into the ancient world because of the sand turning into glass, and we can speculate, but we know from recorded history not too long ago, a little bit older than me, maybe a little bit older than you, Brother Scotty, but we know that the United States has dropped the bomb on a few countries. So I would most definitely not get rid of mine, regardless of the peace talks. But I understand why they would say such. Was you finna say something, Brother Scotty?
I actually just said yes, sir, when you were talking.
Oh, okay, that was you. Okay, Ross.
Yeah, my bad.
No worries. Yeah. Do you have the rest of those articles pulled up, Brother Ross? Because I can't seem to find mine. But
I just wanted
to mention that. From our thread, the different articles that we was gonna go over. We taking Sando over tonight. But while you're looking for those, I want to get into one of these articles that you put up, because I thought this was very telling, and it comes from the Telegraph. The daughter of poisoned Russian spy fighting for her life in the hospital. Now, this makes me think, and your commentary on that was they trying to kill the whole family. What this makes me think of is all of the holistic doctors that have been supposedly, allegedly committing suicide. You know, nobody knows what's going on. They just up and started going into hemorrhage for no particular reason. You know, and now this young lady's in the hospital fighting for her life after they just poisoned her father. You know,
if I remember correctly, they were both together. They were both found together. And they said the father was looking up at the sky, making weird hand gestures, and his eyes were glazed over, and she was out cold. So they were both together. So whatever it is, I don't know. I'm assuming it might be something they ate, because I think they might have been gone to a restaurant or something. It's really crazy, because when you... I remember I was watching some information about Dr. Khalid Muhammad, and it was Steve Coakley talking about it, and talked about how the night that he passed away, that he was traveling from an event, and he ordered some Chinese food to, I guess, arrive at his house shortly after he got there. And he ate the food. He said that after like an hour or so that his stomach was feeling funny. He went to the toilet, he threw up, and then after that, he basically slipped into like a coma. He had an aneurysm, and Steve Coakley was saying that somebody had intercepted the Chinese food delivery person and
right.
sprinkled some stuff in his pizza, in his Chinese food, and when he ate it, of course it did what it was supposed to do. And he isn't the only person. I heard a similar thing happened with Dr. Amos Wilson as well. So it's not, you know, and that's just with us. There's other stories around the world of these types of things. If you read The Judas Factor, The Plot to Kill Malcolm X, you'll see just the many different ways that, that at least the CIA has of killing people, and all of that's included. Like, nothing's off the table. You know, one of the other things they like to use is nicotine, because nicotine is highly toxic in large doses. So that's another thing that they're quite famous for doing to people, too. Go ahead.
Yes, it's very interesting, because we just had this conversation on Melanated Roots last night about the CIA hitting these people, these different people up,
mm-hmm.
because of what they exposing. And it's, you know, I really don't know what to say, you know, because I've had run-ins. Never thought I'd done nothing too much to have the FBI looking in on my affairs or what have you, but I've experienced that myself, you know, and it's not a great feeling, you know. You find yourself doing stuff that you normally wouldn't do, you know, tearing up certain papers, checking food that pop up, you know, or even not ordering food at all if you don't see it being delivered. Not delivered, excuse me, if you don't see it being prepared.
You know, it's funny you said that, because you and I have talked, so you know that myself and my family's had our own experiences with that sort of stuff as well. And it's funny, because I remember Dr. Clark had told a very poignant story about Minister Malcolm X, and it's actually one of my favorite stories, because it's so intelligent and it's something we could all learn from. He said that all throughout his years of knowing him, that Minister Malcolm never ate anywhere outside of Sister Betty's cooking. The only time he ate outside would be at a Nation of Islam restaurant or whatever the case may be, and that was extremely rare. He was like 98% of the time he was eating Sister Betty's cooking. But the one time that they were together and he ate out, his codification was just legendary. So he said that they met, I think it was around 125th Street, and there was a restaurant that was open in the late hours of the morning, because he was running the whole day doing all kinds of stuff for the Nation. So they met in this restaurant, and it was a quiet little restaurant. Not many were open, so he specifically chose this one. And when they went there, he said that he ordered a steak and eggs and something else. And he said that Malcolm stood with the chef and watched him pull out every ingredient, watched him, every move that chef made, his eyes were on it, and that he was not going to eat if he couldn't see how his food was being prepared and who was preparing it, and watched them prepare it. Mm-hmm. And that, he said that was the first, last, and only time he ever saw him eat outside of Sister Betty's cooking. And most of us don't do that. We automatically trust folks when we go to restaurants. We're kind of forced to now, even the way that the restaurants are set up. But ultimately, we go and we trust people to do things the right way and with, you know, with cleanliness and all of this type of stuff. But I've seen more than enough footage of chefs, sometimes a server, actually doing things to people's food, especially Black people. Like, it's legendary, the stuff that they've done to our food before they present it to us. So that's why, like, a big part of my codification is, if I do choose to eat out, it has to be at a non-white establishment. And it's very rare for me, too. It has to be at a non-white establishment, or they have to have an extremely high amount of non-white people working as far as the servers and the people handling the food. And that's pretty much my code. But like I said, it's something that I don't do very often. But yeah, it was just interesting. So I thought I would put that out there just so people could think about, you know, when we go out to eat, I don't care if it's McDonald's, I don't eat that. But I mean, wherever you go, just think about who's preparing it and what they can and might have done to your food before they bring it to you. And it might make you think twice, like you were saying, because when stuff like this happens, like what happened in that article, or like what happened to Dr. Khalid Muhammad, it really puts things in perspective about people cooking their own food and knowing what they're cooking, because they're the ones who bought the ingredients.
You know what? A lot of us, and I hate to say this, and I hope nobody takes this wrong, but a lot of us don't even have to worry about that, because we're so docile as a community at whole, is that they really don't even worry about us. Now, when we get to the point to where we start discussing these things and sharing them, then we get contacted. And, mm-hmm. and some of the contact that it's a bunch of us out there that have been contacted, but they just overlooked it as maybe a mistake. They couldn't be looking for me. But think about the things that you say, the things that you tell people, and the actions that happen afterwards. When you start thinking about that, you will realize that certain things happen. I wanted to read this real quick, and this is not an article or nothing. This is just something, because we're going to get back to the articles, but I wanted to talk about this the other day. We didn't ever get into it.
Okay, let's do it.
But since we have deboed Tando Radio tonight, I'm gonna make the effort to share this information. I had on our show, I had discussed about, I believe that I was put on the BIE list. And Brother Scotty, I would love to hear your commentary on this particular thing. I was contacted. I went to go buy a pistol not too long ago. And now I've done a lot of things to deserve to be able to buy a pistol. And when I say that, I mean as far as like how the law is written. But I haven't been charged. A lot of times I went to court with the life that I used to live. I went to court. I had enough money to pay these people off, and I never was charged. So I'm not a felon per se. But from what I was reading, apparently I'm a felon in theory. And I know that sounds crazy, but I'm going to detail this right now. So that you can see. Now, this comes from TBI. For those of you who don't know, TBI is the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation. It's the Tennessee section of the FBI. Every state has one. They have their own department of the FBI specifically for that state. And that's what this is, the TBI. Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, and the director is Mark Gwynn. Gwynn is G-W-Y-N. Now, this is what it states. Please be advised that your appeal of denial of attempted firearm transfer has resulted in an effort by TICS to obtain necessary but missing information to either overturn the denial or uphold it. TICS's effort were not successful. Information requested from the arresting agency and or clerk of office was not received within the 15 calendar days TICS is allowed under Tennessee law, as required by the state. TICS has changed the denial to a conditional proceed status. Your gun dealer, quote unquote, FFL, may lawfully transfer the firearm to you. It does not mean that the gun dealer is required to transfer the firearm to you. The decision to transfer or not to transfer is left solely up to the gun dealer. Now they sent me that message, and then they sent me another message about a month later, stating that a prior offense that I was never charged for is the reason why they sent me that message. And what's interesting to me is that when I do my own background check, like I stated, I have no felonies. Nothing that will get that should keep me from getting a firearm, but yet and still, yes. State your name, where you calling from? Go ahead.
It's Rob from Atlanta. How you doing, brother?
Peace. How you doing, Rob?
I'm still learning. Still learning.
Up,
how
Rob?
Are you today?
Peace. I'm
pretty
still
good.
Learning
I just
too.
Wanted to comment. I just wanted to comment on what you were saying, and you know, due to the current events and the future events that haven't happened yet, you know, I never really put myself in a position where I needed a firearm, but I just recently bought a firearm, you know, for the protection of my household. And, you know, I got an F on my report card or whatever, you know, non-violent crime or whatever. Just trying to feed my kids, you know what I'm saying? But yes, I went to the show, and I didn't have any problem getting one.
Okay, I so you say you went, you went to the show. Okay, but I went to an actual a gun dealer.
Okay.
I went to a gun dealer. See, what you was involved in is what they call a private sale. Now,
right.
and that's the loophole, is that a private sale, because I'm fully aware of the Tennessee laws. Actually, I'm pretty good with the laws on guns in any state. I know where you can't have a gun. I know what to do if you do have a gun, if you have a carry permit when you go into states that don't allow guns. You know, these are all of these things you have to know when you have a brain fart. When you have not a firearm, because you can't just go anywhere with a firearm. When you have a concealed carry permit, that's what I mean. When you have a concealed carry permit, when you go, like, say if I had a concealed carry permit and I was coming up there to visit you, Roz, I know that in New York they don't allow firearms. So what I have to do is that I have to call ahead before I make it to New York, let them know that I'm coming through, what vehicle that I'm driving, what's the license plate, what's the date on my concealed carry permit, so that they can run all of that stuff before I run through, and somebody will meet me there and not necessarily escort me, but there will be somebody that's watching me until I get out of that state. You know, these are all of the things that you have to pay attention to.
That's crazy. That's crazy right there.
Yes, it is crazy, Scotty. But these are the things that you have to do, because even if you have a concealed firearm permit and you go into one of these states that don't allow guns, they will get you. And every time that you go, you're not necessarily guaranteed to get your firearm back when they stop you and you have it.
Well, that's a deterrent for me even telling them in the first place. When I bought my pistols, when I bought my pistols in Arizona when I was in the military, and then I got out the military, I ain't called nobody. I just drove home with my guns in tow, and I still got them.
Okay. Well, let's not get this confused, Brother Scotty, because I'm not saying that's what I would do.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
I'm just stating that these are the laws that I put in place, and it's a bunch of hurdles. It's a bunch of hurdles. But to get back what I was saying, as far as the that letter that I had just read, the Tennessee division of the FBI, when I was stopped from purchasing a firearm here in my hometown, where it's legal to be able to do that, they didn't have a reason. Now let me read this this one little part one more time, just so you can understand the gist of what I'm saying. Please be advised that your appeal of denial of attempted firearm transfer has resulted in an effort by TICS to obtain necessary but missing information needed to either overturn the denial or uphold it. That means that they didn't have no reason to stop me from the get-go.
Okay, so these are my thoughts.
Brother.
From what you were reading, basically, and the other part you were reading, what I heard was, we don't have a reason to deny this man a firearm or purchasing a firearm, and we're leaving it up to the dealer. That's what I heard. Did I hear that correctly?
Yep.
But that is it.
But they denied me initially.
Okay, well,
that's the whole reason I got the paper.
Right, they denied you.
They probably didn't plan on you. Go ahead. I was just going to say, they probably didn't plan on you doing an appeal neither, though.
That's possible. Well,
you know what I'm saying?
Well, Jenna, I don't want to share some of the stuff that you shared with me privately, but I'm not surprised. Well, you basically mentioned how you had to pay off some people years ago. So I'm not surprised that you would get that initial determination. Okay? But, again, you was never convicted. You paid the people off. You got out of that trouble. And that's in another state. So state of Tennessee, they're admitting that they don't have no right to deny you a firearm. Now, whether or not you go back to this dealer with this paper and he sells you the firearm, let's say you do, and he doesn't. He said, well, you know what? Too many red flags here. I'm not going to sell you the firearm, even though they're saying there's no reason. Then it's up to, it's on you whether or not you want to sue that dude for violating your constitutional Second Amendment rights and play the NRA card-carrying member, you know, role on them and whatnot. So that's my determination or my assessment of what you're going through, that they don't have a reason to deny you a weapon. They can't put you on some kind of list banning you from having the weapon. So they're kicking it back down to the dealer and telling the dealer it's up to you, you know? And so,
you know what?
Yeah.
You know what, Scotty? I was thinking about that too, because you've had run-ins with the law, they know what your race is. So what they saw was black males.
Exactly.
Want guns? Oh, nah, we can't have that. So they did just what Scotty said. They rejected you at first, and then the feds were like, you know what? If he decides to really take this further, we don't want to be on the carpet for that. Let's put it in the discretion. And Gus from the Cows always talks about that word discretion. It's up to the discretion of the owner of the gun dealership that you go through whether or not they want to do it. And that's pretty much
what it is.
They didn't want to touch that legally. They're like, it's going to cost us too much money and taxpayer dollars to be dealing with something like that. Let's hand it down to him and we done. You know, as long as we can.
Well, look, I'm going to tell you why I even bring that story up. Because we were just mentioning about the BIA, you know, because I bought several guns prior to that. And we can... like Brother Scotty said, my initial thought was that I haven't done anything wrong as far as the law is concerned within these particular proceedings, because like I stated before I even read that, is that I done several things, you know, and this is where my knowledge comes in about certain things that I know. It's because I made the mistakes to be able to learn from. Mm-hmm. And I share those type of things so that other people don't necessarily have to go through those particular problems. But right now, with this BIE being put in place, we are being scrutinized at a totally different level. So I kept that letter not because I wanted to go back and try to get one, because you know what, I'm not even going to mention that here on this show, but you know, it's a bunch of ways to skin a cat, per se. So that's not even an issue for me. But that's a notification. That's one of those little elbow nudges to let you know that we see what's going on. And a lot of us get these little elbows all the time, and we just ignore them. Because in the letter that I just read, it stated that there was no reason, like Brother Scotty just mentioned, there was no reason for them to stop me. But when you start looking at what I have been talking about over the last 3.5, almost 4 years, it's a problem. It's a very serious problem. And if we don't notice it, then we basically asking for whatever they give us. And that's the only reason why I brought that up. It was not, of course, it wasn't in none of the articles that we had done, we was going to discuss or what have you. I just found that, I found for it to be very special, particularly with this article that we had just got off of, because not only do they follow you, They follow your family.
Hey, brother Jerry.
So when they are alerted to you, they are alerted to everybody that you come in contact with.
Hey, brother Jerry.
So pay attention to that. Go ahead, brother Scotty.
Yeah, so I posted this video of this black couple. They weren't young either. They're around my age, you know, in their 50s or 40s or whatnot. And they went to Dick's Sporting Good, and they refused to sell to them. And the guy, same situation, didn't have anything to prevent them from buying it, meaning the guy didn't have no felonies. I can play that clip for you if you want to hear it, because I think
Please do right now. If you can, as soon as possible. So
yeah, I just pulled it up.
We ain't jumping back and forth.
Yeah, I just pulled it up, and I published this in 2012. It was on a local news media website, so this person is from my area. And so I posted it in 2012, and I still get comments on this video. It's one of the more popular videos that I posted. But I'm going to go ahead and run this news report from Channel 3 CBS News out of Charlotte. And this is, again, 2012, but it's very similar to what Jerry mentioned.
A Charlotte couple says Dick's Sporting Goods refused to sell them a gun because of their last name and their race. Bernard Miller tells us he wanted to buy a gun because he spotted a coyote in his yard. But he says Dick's would not sell it to him because another man with the last name Miller, who is also black, tried to buy the same gun and failed his background check. We're on your side with this story, all new at 11 o'clock.
Both of them thought that I was a joke. They were laughing at me.
Bernard Miller and his wife Francine say the Dick's Sporting Goods on W.T. Harris Boulevard wouldn't sell them a rifle tonight. They claim because they're black.
They made us feel as if we were thieves or something. So she was calling the police on us that we had to get out. They practically chased us out of the store.
It started, they say, because they went in to buy a rifle to protect themselves after recently seeing a coyote. After 40 minutes of shopping and working with the sales agent, they settled on one that fit their price range, a .22 rifle that cost just over $200. Bernard was then asked to fill out paperwork.
And I get ready to hand him the papers back. Then that's when he come out with a silly grin on his face, talking about he couldn't sell me a rifle. He wasn't going to sell. He made a decision. He said that he made the decision not to sell me a rifle.
The sales agent told the couple a man in Matthews with the last name Miller had tried to buy the same exact gun, but was denied. So because Bernard's last name was also Miller, Dick's wasn't going to sell it to him.
He was black, and his last name was Miller. So automatically, they put that off on me.
How do they know the other guy was also black? Because inside the store, Francine asked for the manager, demanded an explanation, and recorded the conversation. On tape, Francine says the manager of Dick's Sporting Goods says the other Miller was also African American.
So they figure I'm black, my last name is Miller, so they're going to treat me any kind of way. And that's what they did.
All right, Jerry, I'm a stop it there, but I did not know that they can choose not to sell you a weapon. And so how does that work? I mean, let's say, for example, I go to the local grocery store. Can they refuse to sell me groceries? I mean, what's the difference here? We're talking about retail. I don't mean to compare guns to groceries, but the concept is still the same. Can these stores just deny to sell anything to anyone based off of any kind of reason? But that does relate to what you just said, because here you have the gun shop who is using their own discretion, not because the FBI or the state of North Carolina said they couldn't buy a gun. He's saying, hey, I'm doing this because I want to do it.
Well, listen, Scotty, and I'm gonna go back to this letter once again, and I'm gonna read two sentences. It does not mean that the gun dealer is required to transfer the firearm to you. The decision to transfer or not transfer is now left solely up to the gun dealer. So yes. They actually do, and they treat that as a patriotic act to prevent things like we see all the time with these white people going out and murdering folks. But we're the only ones who get the blunt of this. You know,
who get that law applied to them. That rule is only applied to us. It's not applied to white people, you know, or anybody else whom they so choose in the moment to say, you know, I don't have a problem selling you this firearm.
But well, it kind of goes back. Oh, my apologies. Go ahead, Ross.
Oh, no. I was just going to say that it's really the law providing a means for an individual to practice racism. That's pretty much what it is. They're providing this discretion, and that's why Gus always hones in on that word. Once you get to discretion, it means that person's personal preference, wherever they fit in that moment. So that's how racism works. White people do to us whatever they want in that moment, and they're most times able to get away with it. So
think about this.
Mm-hmm.
Think about this, Scotty. It goes back to understanding the law, which a lot of us don't never look at, don't study, and even in some of us, when we do look at it, we don't understand. So when you get up and you start speaking about the 13th Amendment, even though people have read the 13th Amendment, they still don't understand that slavery was never abolished. And that's just the same thing with the rest of these laws. You know, a lot of us don't comprehend. Let me back up a little bit. A lot of us are not taught to learn reading comprehension. That's the first thing. So we read through stuff and we make out of it what we make out of it. We never really understand it until somebody explains it to us. So when you read up on these laws, you have to have some type of reading comprehension. And that's not to say that people are dumb or what have you. It's just the way that it's worded. And we take what we think instead of going and finding out so that we can know.
Yeah, I wouldn't call anyone dumb, but I would say that reading comprehension, and this is from education statistics, is very low in the United States. Most people... I think over 50% of the people in the United States can't even read.
Hold on, Brother Scotty. Whoever that is, can you mute yourself or otherwise we'll have to mute you.
My apologies. I had a comment.
Okay. Well, we'll come back to you. Who is that, Brother Tommy? Brother Rio.
Brother Rio.
Brother,
but I didn't mean to interrupt, brother. I didn't mean to interrupt,
right,
Brother Scotty either.
All right, just mute yourself for a moment and let Brother Scotty continue on with his point. We'll come to you right after that.
Yeah, all I was saying is I don't call people dumb, although they do dumb things. But in terms of reading comprehension, most Americans cannot properly comprehend that which they read, and this is just a fact. That over 50% of people in the United States can't even read at an eighth grade reading level. This is according to their statistics. So, So you know, that's a major problem. And I feel like why we get so much misinformation is that we're not understanding what we're reading, and then we're taking our interpretation, which may not be correct, and then we say, hey, this is what it is, and it may not be what it is. Like you brought up the 13th Amendment.
That happens a lot.
People still read the 13th Amendment and still cannot comprehend that slavery technically was never abolished, just transformed.
What you said is so accurate, Scotty, because I see that a lot where people don't comprehend what they read. Yeah.
And that's why I brought it up. And like I don't call people dumb either, Brother Scotty. It's a curse word at my house, just like any other cuss word. You know, when you're dealing with children, you know they like to throw that out there. And I have children ranging from 16 to 3. So you know, words get thrown out there, but I have made it my purpose in my house to make sure that dumb, stupid, these are cuss words along with a bunch of the other four-letter words that a lot of us adults use. But that's neither here nor there. Brother Rio, if you're done, Scotty, we'd like to get Brother Rio in here before we get to the next subject. The next article, excuse me.
Yeah, I got a book to suggest when he's
Well, hold on, Brother Rio, because I know you finna let some stuff go real quick. So if you would, Scotty, you'll go ahead on and hit us with that commercial, because I know, I think with Brother Rio and our rebuttals, we'll run over. So if you can go ahead on and hit that up, cue that up for us real quick, and we'll get into it on the other side.
Podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Not a Wu-Tanga. Hey, man, I love that. Yeah,
that track that took us into the break, I love that one. That instrumental, I think that's like a real jamming joint right there.
Yo, we are special guest tonight. This is Tando Radio Show. Your ears are not deceiving you. We are stepping in for Brother Dave, who could not make it today. I am Jenna Kepra, alongside of my co-host, Brother Roz. And right now, we are getting ready to get into another special brother that also hosts the show on BTI. Brother Rio, what say you, as Dave would say?
Yes, sir. Greetings to all the brothers, Brother Scotty, Brother Roz, Jenna. You guys are doing a great job. I just wanted to interject a slightly different line of thinking and put this out to the brothers and see what they thought. When I was listening to you read, I heard you refer to the gun as being transferred. The dealer has the discretion to transfer the firearm to whoever it is that is trying to purchase it. And then, you know, it came to my mind that, well, guns are registered. They have a registration number. They have a serial number. And at any time, the authorities can come and take possession of that said firearm. So even though you have to pay taxes on it, are they really trying to say that it is truly just transferred and that you actually do not own it? Because parameters that are set on it.
May I interject real quick? Sorry about that.
Yes, sir, bro.
That's a misconception with the guns. They are not logged the way that they state. Now you could run the serial numbers and see if the firearm has been stolen. But if it has not been stolen, there is no database that's actually held to where person X owns firearm X and so on and so forth. That actually does not exist. They stopped that, and I'm going off of memory, I want to say back in 2003. So there is no gun registry.
Yeah, there is. I agree with you, Brother Jerry. The only record is the point of sale. And
correct.
When they're saying transfer, at that point, the gun shop, whoever owns the gun shop, owns the weapon. And he's transferring ownership of that weapon to a buyer, which would be you. I'm not aware of any databases or whatnot. You know, I bought my weapons a couple of my weapons in Arizona. I didn't register them when I got back to North Carolina, you know, after I left Arizona. I did
right.
report one of them stolen, though, because one of them was stolen. I had a little silver 25, .25, little handgun, you know, I call it a lady gun. And that got stolen, and I reported that, and that was about the end of it. Never heard anything
right.
else. I guess they never got the
weapon.
The
only thing they have to go on is the serial number, because like Brother Scotty just mentioned, and what I just mentioned before he started, is that there's actually they stopped that because there's so many private gun sales that go on I don't know how many of y'all are still attached to Facebook, because we do have this wonderful BTR community. But for those of you who are on Facebook, you remember 2 to 3 years ago, they stopped allowing you to put your firearms up for sale in the marketplace after one of those shootings. Because when you put your firearms up in the marketplace, that is considered a private sale. And I personally, nobody ever made the distinction, whether it was from the government, from the NRA or what have you, nobody ever made the distinction that that's the reason why they done it. But if you look at all of the school shootings, you will find that they was quote unquote making it harder for private sales to happen. Because I know here in Tennessee, where I'm from, we stay right on the corner of East Tennessee. We have Georgia, Alabama, South Carolina. We have those three states, like, all right there connected. So what happens is that you have people from South Carolina, Alabama, and Georgia within that small radius that would drive up here, or we could drive down there and purchase firearms, and nobody would know what happened.
Yeah, I do have...
Go ahead, Brother Scott, I hear you.
I'm sorry, Brother Jay. I just wanted to pull up the information. Canada does have a gun registry. You do have to register your guns in Canada. According to concealedcarry.com, this article was published 2015. It says, generally speaking, for the majority of American gun owners, there is no system, database, or registry that ties us to any of our firearms. Even the Brady Act that created the background check system requires that the records of each background check be destroyed within 24 hours.
Ah, Brother Scotty, look at, hey, you come right on time, man, with these facts. I love you, brother. And that's exactly what I was saying. You know, a lot of us think this, and that goes back to the comprehension part. You know, we hear certain things from certain people, whether they may be a friend or foe. We just hear these things and we believe them to be true. But the truth of the matter is here within these here United States, no gun registry. But I think we done, I want to kind of
just one last thing, Brother Jerry, just one last thing. You are correct, and they used to have a registration, and that was enacted with the National Firearms Act in 1934. But that has been repealed.
Thank you, sir. It's always good to have those facts. And with that being said, Brother Rise, we're going to pass it to you for some of these other articles, because we have a few things that we want to get into. We might have to go back on air at later on tonight, because I see that it is getting interesting. Go ahead, brother.
Okay. Well, there was quite a few things that we wanted to get into. The first thing is, I'm waiting for it to load now. It's a very, very important article, and what's happening here might set a precedent across the country as far as what's taking place with net neutrality and how they're moving forward with that, because I know that April 23rd is the deadline for everything to become legal and for us to start seeing however they choose to make it manifest. They can leave things the way that they always were, or you'll start to notice that websites don't load, certain websites don't load as fast, and then that'll be like the physical sign of things changing. So this article is from LATimes.com. Washington becomes the first state to approve net neutrality rules. Setting up like a legal fight with the Trump administration, Washington has become the first state to enact its own net neutrality requirements after U.S. regulators repealed Obama-era rules designed to keep the internet an even playing field. Quote, we know that when D.C. fails to act, Washington State has to do so, unquote. That's Governor Jay Inslee said on Monday before signing the bipartisan measure that bans internet providers from blocking content or interfering with online traffic. The new law also requires internet providers to disclose information about their management practices, performance, and commercial terms. Violations would be enforceable under the state's Consumer Protection Act. The Federal Communications Commission voted in December to gut U.S. rules meant to prevent broadband companies such as Comcast, AT&T, and Verizon from exercising more control over what people watch and see on the internet. The regulations also prohibited providers from favoring some sites and apps over others. Because the FCC prohibited state laws from contradicting its decision, opponents of the Washington law have said it would lead to lawsuits. Inslee said that he was confident of its legality, saying, quote, "The states have full right to protect their citizens," unquote. I'll end it there. But I think that this is going to set a precedent where other states, just based on especially how their populace has responded to net neutrality being basically abolished, I'm pretty sure that those lawmakers that are really in tune with their citizens will start doing what Washington State did, where individual states are going to force these companies within their borders to make sure that they uphold the net neutrality rules and don't succumb to Washington, D.C.'s faux pas in regard to them making the decisions to abolish it with Jeep Pie. I cannot stand that proxy.
Well, you know, I had mentioned this to you, Brother Roz, and and that is a great situation in theory it is.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We have to think about Washington State, though. A lot of suspected racists call that, of course, quote unquote, a liberal state. What goes on up there, though, is that a lot of those people in Washington State pay attention to the laws and stuff that are being carried out. Not so much for the rest of the United States, though.
I agree.
You know, so when you say that they will follow they will follow their lead, we have to assume, and you know what they say about assuming, but we have to assume that the rest of the other 49 states know what net neutrality is.
Well, that's why I gave the caveat that, you know, if the person is in tune with the citizenry and the citizenry is aware of what this means and they're not for it, that those lawmakers in tune with their citizenry, who would also be aware, would do what they did. But you're right, absolutely right. The vast majority, I mean, Scotty just said it. He just talked about the lack of reading comprehension. And,
right.
You know, like I said, I think that that is a major problem in today's day and age. Like, it's a major, major problem. And it's something that I've seen getting worse over the last few years. It's really interesting. But it's accurate. It's completely accurate. We can say what we want about the English language, but ultimately there's a lot of people who it just doesn't compute. And even when you were talking about reading comprehension in regards to legalities, you got to remember that words can mean two totally different things. A legal term,
right,
like in Black's Law Dictionary, is completely different from what's in the Webster's Dictionary. So just that in and of itself takes a certain level of understanding of the way the real world functions to know, hey, if I'm looking up this particular term, you know, if I'm dealing with it in the sense of legalities, I can't go with the Webster Dictionary meaning. Let me get that Black's Law Dictionary out and make sure I know what I'm talking about. Like, just something as simple as that. And, you know, me being a writer, a historian, a researcher, that's something that I encounter a lot, where, you know, sometimes folks will read something and they really don't understand it. You'll talk to them about it and they might think they understand what they read, and then as they're breaking it down to you or giving you what they think it is, it's not what's actually on the paper. So.
Exactly. Yo, I'm telling you, I'm none of those things what Brother Ross just mentioned. Maybe slightly a beginner in researching. Maybe. I'm just an old country dude that done been around the world and I have different views. But when I go to court, I take my Black Law Dictionary with me. And just the sight of that being in my hands changed the perception and the approach of those who I'm going to see.
Absolutely.
So this is things that I think that everybody that's on this call, and anybody who plays the playback, anybody who listens to Black Talk Radio Network, you need to own a Black Law Dictionary, preferably one of the earlier versions. But if you can't get that, get the one that's available to you, and look through some of these terms that you use on a daily basis, because they don't mean what you think they mean. With that being said, let's get through some more of these articles before we get started into the show. I wanted to get into this, and I put this up last week. I put this up last week, and I mentioned it on our show, Real Life on Foundational Radio Network. But since we have the privilege to be able to be on Black Talk Radio Network today, I want to share it with the family. And this comes from USA Today News. Who is an African American? Definition evolves as USA does. Now, I want to mention this because on Melanated Roots last night, we was talking about the subject of the South African non-melanated people came up. Now, I just want to read, I'm not going to read the entire article. I just want to give you a small check of it, and you can find this in BTR Community up on the Foundational Radio Network. And let's get this started real quick. There was a time when being black in America meant you were most likely descended from one or more enslaved Africans who had survived the transatlantic slave trade. However, as the number of African and Caribbean blacks immigrating to the USA has increased, so have the chances that someone who identifies as black or African American is a first or second generation immigrant. That's the first paragraph. That's all I'm going to read. This, what I'm getting ready to add to it, has nothing to do with the article, but it has everything to do with the article. I mentioned on Tando a couple weeks ago, last week I believe, when we hosted the show last week, I think I had brought this up, and I mentioned it on Melanated Roots, and of course on Real Life on Foundational Radio Network, is that these white South Africans are pleading to Donald Trump to be able to come over here as refugees. And you mentioned this also last night, Brother Rise. And the reason I'm stating this is because, what is an African American? That was the question. Well, when these white people come over here from South Africa, they're going to be deemed as African Americans. So, understand how far down we are continuously being, I'm not even going to say push. I would like to use the word stomp, because that's what we're getting done to us at this particular time. And whether, I'm not going to say we can't do anything about it, I'm not going to say that we can. Whatever we do, before we do anything, we have to be aware that these things are happening. So unless anybody else want to add to that,
I would like to add to that. But you got a call as well. Just want to recognize, I believe we have Thomas from New York on the line. Let me just quickly say this. All nationality mean is whatever country you are subject to the jurisdiction of. That's all nationality means. So when we say American, that's all they're saying, is that I am subject to the laws, by the laws or the U.S. Constitution, I'm considered a citizen of the United States. And so I guess to shorten the name, it's just American. That's your nationality. A nationality of a South African would be South African. Or, you know, if I'm in another country, my nationality might be Nigerian. Okay? But let's use Nigeria. Do you know how many different ethnic groups you got in Nigeria? You got a whole bunch of them. So some of those people over there, they might self-identify with their ethnic tribal group and not as Nigerian. But if they come over here and you ask them, well, they may tell you what tribe they belong to, or they might just simply say, well, I'm a Nigerian, which is their nationality. In terms of these crackers, these racist crackers from South Africa, I don't think they're going to be given political asylum, which is what I think they're asking for. But if they were to come over here, I mean, technically anybody can from Africa who gets citizenship in the United States, whether they black or not, could claim that, oh, I'm an African American. But I don't agree with everything she says on this subject. But Breaking Brown, Yvette Carnell, for those who are descendants of victims of slavery, I will use that designation because it means something legally. I'm a descendant of victims of slavery. She say descendants of slaves. Slave is a dehumanizing term, so I choose not to use it. I say DVOS, descendant of victim of slavery, descendant victim of slavery, however you want to say it, but I always put that victim in there, which I picked up from Gus when I asked him of the cows, why do you say victim? Because I know from religious or spiritual points of view, people will not refer to themselves as victims. It's not saying that they're not being oppressed, but they're just saying from a spiritual standpoint, if I claim to be that, I'm always going to be that. I'm always going to be a victim. But from a legal standpoint, the way Gus described it to me is from a legal standpoint, victims get reparations. So it makes sense to me. You know, you're a victim of a crime. So it makes sense to me in using it. So that's why I don't say descendant of slaves. I say descendant of victims of slavery. If you are in fact that, because some of us ain't.
I use the term enslaved, which means that you were put in that position. You know, you're not born a slave; they made you one. So I use enslaved or enslavement rather than slave, because I think that's a lot more dehumanizing term, and just to me, it's a brutal term. So I use the term enslaved, so that just says it's not a voluntary thing. The person didn't wake up one day and say, "Yeah, I just want to be a slave today." You know. It's something that was forced upon that person. So, yeah, I agree with you completely, Scotty, with that.
I got a small rebuttal, but I'm going to hold it. And, Brother Thomas, your mic is open. Go ahead, brother.
Yes, peace be all. Peace. Scotty, I agree with you. I don't agree with very much of what Ms. Aretha Carnell says, but I do agree with that descendants of slaves, it separates the black people from America, from everyone else in the planet, and all those other people have a nationality. We don't, you know, so it gives us a name. I would prefer to pick one of our own and we vote on it and we just roll with it, but I think descendants of slaves is pretty accurate. And also victims. I like always like that Gus used that. I always I get the legal ramifications, but also I always like it because I think it's accurate. We are victims. You're being victimized every day. And if you look at yourself in that way, you start to say, well, how can I not be a victim? You know, that's like going to that 12-step program. First, you got to admit you're an addict, and then you start to fixing your addiction, and our addiction is white supremacy, unfortunately. And I like that term, and I don't like the term insanity, because that gives them a legal way out. Because you commit a crime, I could come in the house one day and kill my whole family and plead insanity, and maybe spend 10 years in a mental institution instead of life in prison. So I want these people to be served to justice, and not giving them any ways out. They know what they're doing all the time, and that's why they do it. As for the law, a lot of people with excellent reading comprehension, they can't read the law, legal ease is something totally different. Even with a Black's Law Dictionary, very few lawyers that I've ever worked for ever use those. They have a whole other set of parameters. You have to be trained to read that. And I'm going to be honest, most lawyers can't even read the law. They know the procedures of the law, but they don't know the law itself. You know, that's what they use people like myself or a paralegal or another legal aid or something for. So the way that you read those laws, I would have to look at the law in Tennessee. But it's like Rod said, you know, discretion. They add that in there, and that kind of supersedes the whole law. But they'll still write a whole another 20 pages. But the discretion part really is what it all came down to. So it's up to the judge, or it's up to the third party, or however it might work out, whatever case. So that's definitely very important. But I can't emphasize enough that we had a lot of people die in this country for us, and they died to give us certain rights. They walked over bridges, were beat up, they were killed. And the little bit of rights that we did get and that are acknowledged, it's not equitable that people from other places to come in and get those same privileges. They didn't put up no fight in this struggle. So in my opinion, that's why I another main reason why I like that to have another designation for Black people here to everyone else. And I was just at my daughter's school. She's a junior. One of the seniors, and he was the first kid from the school to get into an Ivy League college, but his parents came in African outfits. So it was like, well, he's really not, you know, he's and 40% of the Ivy League school scholarships go to second generation Black people, second generation African American. So the things that our ancestors like Martin Luther King and Malcolm and all of the great ones fought for, we're losing to people that look like us but from other places. And I think that that's a problem. I'll meet my line thinking.
I have a question for Thomas, if y'all allow me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead, Brother Scott. After you and Brother Thomas get done, I'm gonna add my little small rebuttal in, and we're going to pass it back to Roz to get kind of, because we're getting close on this next break. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, Brother Thomas, you know, I appreciate what you were saying about comprehending the legalese and all of that, and then, you know, paralegals being relied upon and look up the actual law to see what it says. But don't you have to also throw in there how the courts have interpreted the law? Because I've seen some crazy interpretations. If you read whatever statute or amendment that is, you know, the topic of discussion, and then you look at some of the different interpretations, if it goes through appeals court process and you know, not even having to make it all the way up to the Supreme Court, but that how they interpret it is very key, because I've seen some crazy interpretations.
They call that case law.
Case law, you know, right. That's what it's called. Yeah.
Absolutely. And lawyers do not interpret the law. That's not their job.
Right. It's the judges.
The paralegal, the legal aid, whoever does, that's their job to interpret the law. The lawyer just follows the procedures as far as knowing what needs to be filed. And they really don't, I mean, they'll sit at the law library for an hour, and then they'll ask you a question. You're like, oh, you just got to go right here. And they're like, oh, thank you. You know, like, it's like, you sit here all this time, you got all these degrees. But, you know, it's case law is a whole nother section of the legal library. Absolutely.
Okay, yeah, because me and Brother Thomas done, we done had a few discussions on that. And we probably need to rekindle that all over again. We might need to just have Brother Thomas come on and just do a whole show with us. Based off of the interpretations and the different aspects, of the law. But my rebuttal was back to that to the discretion part, mm-hmm. and that's part of that discretion. It's when these people come from other places, and when they get here,
yes, they were Nigerian when they left, and they're still Nigerian when they land on this landmass. But under the legal definition, they become African American. Like you said, a lot of those people get those scholarships, and it will be no different for those white people that come in and get the special, I don't like to use special treatment, but that's the for lack of a better word, that's the only thing I can find in my head right now, would be whatever special treatment that they claim that they give us.
Reparations.
They would
reparations is the proper terminology. Those laws were passed to repair harm that was being done to Africans. So those civil rights laws, like, say, you know, your employer can't discriminate against you based on race, that's like trying to, looking at the root word of reparations, that's to repair black society. And I think Yvette Carnell has done an excellent job in pointing out how immigrants come here and they take advantage of those reparatory or reparation type laws to their benefit. And I think it's also been stated that, I know Duke University, they prefer to give Africans on the continent those spots, those so-called affirmative action spots, because they say they're not likely to be involved in any kind of black struggle movements like Ross was talking about, the dues that were paid.
Somebody is you have a lot of background noise. If you would please mute yourself, it'll be much appreciated. Go ahead, yeah. Brother Scotty. My apologies.
I was actually done, but yeah, I do see that as being a problem, as Thomas intimated, that, hey, you and Ross intimated, we, our parents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents have been fighting. Ain't nobody gave us nothing. When somebody say that the federal government gave us, they ain't gave us shit, okay? We fought for that. We made demands, okay? Ain't nobody ever gave us nothing. We had to fight for everything that we got. And I think it is incorrect for these colleges and universities to give affirmative action slots at their colleges to continental Africans. And then they're using that to say, hey, see, we're being diverse and we're living up to, you know, what we promised in terms of not discriminating against American-born Africans.
But correct. You know what?
Can I just add in? I just wanted to do a disclaimer because I am a counter-racist now. The number one people getting those affirmative action spots is white women and white people. So I'm totally against them getting anything. They don't deserve
minorities.
I agree.
Under the guise of being a minority.
And they're not even a minority. It's 51% white women and 49% white men, but you know, based off of the system we're in, they're considered a minority. But I'm totally, I would rather see them give a million Africans these scholarships than any one white woman. That's just me. But I just wanted to do a disclaimer because I didn't want to sound too anti-black without putting it anti-white.
Everybody is completely on point, and I wanted to point the finger at them too, because the thing is that because we didn't set the precedent for the reparations, these were things that were provided by the people who are still dominating us. And whenever the victim doesn't set the precedent for their own freedom and their own reparations, it's always going to be something that is beneficial to the person who did the victimizing. And that's what I see is the whole premise with the way that the laws were set up. The racism is in the DNA of the reparations itself. So that when these things happen and these schools do choose to give these benefits to the new African Americans, quote unquote, that the reality is that's being done to create the dissension between the two groups. And it's not either of the two groups' fault. It's the fact that
even though they're putting these things in the law that we're going to repair this damage, that was never the intention. That was meant to be something that was cosmetic and placed on paper to make it look good. But when you get into the DNA of the way things are set up and the way that it actually functions, the racism is in the DNA of that. And if that's never addressed, you're going to be getting reparations for the rest of our lives. They're going to be writing new laws, and every so often, and it's going to be white women that benefit, and it's going to be other immigrants
Let me pick it back up for that real quick, man, because we're getting ready to go into a break, bottom of the hour.
And you do have another caller, too. You have another caller as well. Just want to let them know okay. to hang on and not to hang up.
Yeah. We'll get to the... I know when I get down, we're going to... We're going to get to the break, and we'll come to the caller as soon as we come up out of the break. What I was saying, though, is that, and that's why I wanted to mention it. It wasn't that I disagreed with Brother Scotty or Brother Thomas. It's just the fact of we was just, it goes back to the legalities of everything, the discretion from the people who are reading these legalities. You know, so... We can think what we would like to, but Trump already stated that he wanted more white people here.
Yes, he did.
So if those white people come here, they will be legally African American up under the discretion of the magistrate that brings them in. So what does that mean? That means that all of the reparations, like Brother Scott was just talking about, that we quote-unquote have, that most of us never get to take advantage of, not saying that none of us don't, but most of us do not, most of us are not allowed to take advantage of those. And like Brother Thomas said, they go to white women and people from outside of the continent. When they come in, they gonna get all of those quote unquote reparations that we have that our forefathers have and our foremothers have died, sweated, been injured, bit, shot with fire hoses, murdered, lynched, everything that they went through to afford us that. It's already people that don't look like us that's already taking advantage of that. And now we have somebody with that same quote-unquote designation of African-American that will be coming over here to take advantage of that. Based off of what you just said, Brother Scotty, the designation. With that being said, we're going to go on and hit this break. Thank y'all for tuning in with us. Sorry, Brother Dave couldn't be here. Hopefully everything that we're sharing is constructive to you, that you learned something that you didn't know before. And we'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
The Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
Yo, thank you once again, those of you who get something out of Black Talk Radio Network, please continue to support because Brother Scotty does this out of his pocket. Just like a lot of us who host these shows, we do this out of our pocket because we feel that there's a need out there. Me personally, let me just speak for myself. I started doing this, and I do this out of my pocket because there's so much knowledge out there that I did not know about. And as I continue to better myself as a person, as a father, as a brother, as a son, as a grandson, and hopefully one day a grandfather, I would like to pass this information along to my children and anybody who listens. If you are receiving anything worthwhile that makes you pause from your previous thought pattern to make you think about something else, please give some of your financial gains to Black Talk Radio Network. Once again, thank you for listening. Brother Scotty, we had a caller.
Yeah, we got two callers.
That was on the line waiting.
Yeah, we got two callers. First is Brother Otis, if he wants to chime in.
Brother
and then we got the brother from CMCP. Brother Otis.
Yeah, Brother Chris. Okay. Let's get Brother Otis in there real quick. How you doing, Brother Otis?
Good evening, gentlemen. You got a lot of good information going on in here. I just wanted to kind of chime in because I heard Brother Jerry, you kept talking about the Africans. The part I think you were getting to it, but you didn't really enunciate on it. These white Africans that are asking Trump to come in, the press is just telling you they're asking to come in, but the truth is they're actually trying to ask to come in under temporary protected status, which means once they come here being forced in out of a hostile situation in their home country, there's a whole lot of thing that the president can do to curry favor with them. In other words, right. He can bring them in, set them up, give them benefits, protections, anywhere from 6 months to 18 months, and on top of that, extend them at his discretion.
Discretion, and there we go.
That's why I mentioned the refugee status that they're...
Exactly, that's why I'm saying... Yeah, that comes under the temporary protected status, and it's a separate... It's a lot different than somebody applying for a visa. That's why I was trying to bring it back to say, yeah, that's exactly what you're talking about. And
yes,
here's
the
funny part about it. You know, they brought the Haitians in after the Clinton them got in trouble for what they were doing all crooked down there with the hurricane relief and the earthquake relief. They brought a lot of Haitians in, and they quietly terminated their status in trying to send
exactly.
them back. You know, they put it on hold once Trump got in trouble. You know, they played the politics with this thing, and I don't want to hold y'all up too long. But Trump was about to revoke their status, and then he got in trouble with all this mess going on with Mueller, so he reneged on that. But they still want to get rid of him. So I'm back to what you were saying about the South Africans. If they do it to the white South Africans, you can bet they will have no limit on how many of them can come because they want to put that new black president in check. You're going to take land, we'll bring them to the motherland.
Brother Otis,
the other thing I was going to say, Thomas brought up, because I learned this from experience, is a couple things y'all hit on, even with the gun laws. I found out when you talk about businesses being able to refuse your service, I found out for myself back in the 80s dealing with Arizona. Most states have laws and statutes that say the business owner can refuse service to anyone, but is superseded by federal law. And the only way I could beat some people in Tucson that didn't want to sell to me when I had an interconnect is I had to establish a post office box in Virginia. And then because they refused me service across state lines, I took them to court. So there's all, and I only learned that through shepherdizing through cases because I didn't want to pay a lawyer. So understanding how the cases were, if you go to research them and find out how they were settled in an appellate court, Thomas can probably tell you this. If you read over the appellate court rulings from different level courts, is usually the best way to understand the case law.
Yeah, because it's a president already.
Right.
You are exactly correct, and I'm not going to be too long because I know Brother Chris is there. I just wanted to reiterate what Brother Otis was saying, and that's why I mentioned that they want to come over here under the refugee status, because that is protected. But I'm not going to dive too deep into that right now because we only have a few minutes, because Brother Scotty has to get ready for BTR News tonight that comes on right after us at 8 o'clock. So we will be getting off a little bit early. But Brother Chris, how are you today? What's going on, brother? Let us
I'm
see
doing
what you
good.
Got to bring.
How y'all doing, Roz? What's up?
Still learning, brother. Still learning.
Hey, I just wanted to pass y'all some information. I sent Brother Jerry, I sent you another email to Dropbox. You can spread it to everybody. I have the first and second edition PDF of Black's Law Dictionary.
First
and second edition, 1891 and 1910. So I put it in the Dropbox, sent you the email. You can spread it to everybody. If anybody, you know, got my info, you can shoot me an email. I'll send you the link to Dropbox so y'all can download it and just spread it throughout the community. But that's all
I'm
gonna
put it
to
in
chime in.
I'm gonna put it in BTR community. I'm gonna drop it down up on the Foundational Radio Network. I'm gonna put it in there for sure.
Okay.
Thank you, brother.
It's real hard to get any edition. If you don't get a fifth, that's probably it. You can't find nothing else after 5, maybe 6, 7. So just thought I'd spread that to y'all. Peace.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Brother
Roz, I know we had a whole bunch to talk about tonight that
Brother
we
Jenna.
Definitely did not get into. Yes, sir. Your mic is open. Go ahead.
Just Brother Rio.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to read something into the record for the family real quick. I'll be brief because I know you guys are pressed for time. But this is a definition from the United States Census Bureau, coming down from the Office of Management and Budget. And it says the 1997 OMB standards permit the reporting of more than one race. An individual's response to the race question is based upon self-identification. And they wrote it again. An individual's response to the race question is based upon self-identification. They answer the question, what is race? The data on race were derived from answers to the question on race that was asked of individuals in the United States. The Census Bureau collects racial data in accordance with guidelines provided by the U.S. Office of Management and Budget, and these data are based on self-identification. The racial categories included in the census questionnaire generally reflect a social definition of race recognized in this country and not an attempt to define race biologically, anthropologically, or genetically. In addition, it is recognized that the categories of the race item include racial and national origin or sociocultural groups. People may choose to report more than one race to indicate their racial mixture, such as American Indian and white. People who identify their origin as Hispanic, Latino, or Spanish may be of any race. So I just wanted to read that into the record, and to my recollection, I thought that race was pretty much a construct.
Yeah, that's what it said. That's what you just read. That's how I interpreted it, that they just admitted that it's an entirely social construct.
Yes,
exactly.
I just wanted to read that into the record, family.
Yo, I'm gonna tell y'all something, man. And just to answer Brother Chris, my Black Law Dictionary is an abridged fifth edition, and I got this Black Law Dictionary out of a used bookstore for 75 cents. So if you have any used bookstores, I would tell you to go and check those out, because there's a lot of stuff in there. Now, mind you, when you go in there and they see what you're purchasing, it may not be in there when you go back the next time. So if you want to get one for the people that you love, you get all of them that you see. Because if you go in there and they see your melanated behind purchasing something that could better yourself and better the people around you, they will most definitely take that off of the shelf. As far as what Brother Rio was talking about, I had to go to the doctor here recently
And my apologies, Brother Roz, because I know I was just passing this to you. I'm so sorry. But I'm going to just say, I'm going to make this real quick.
It's all good.
Yo, I've been going to the doctor, and just like what Brother Rio was saying, it's a social construct. I put down, I was a Native American and an American Indian when they asked for my race. And it's totally shocked the funny-looking white women that was working at the desk. Like, they had jokes and everything. Like, I could hear them. They thought I couldn't because I had my headset on. But I was just listening to them. I couldn't hear exactly what they were saying, but I knew they was talking about me because they were speaking to each other and looking down towards my way. And just to stop the conversation altogether, I asked them, what's the definition of an American? And that cleared up so much stuff. Not that they understood, but when they couldn't answer, all of the laughter and the smiles that they had just turned into not necessarily frowns, but like that whoops face, you know, like, oh, I don't know. And all of it stopped. And I know that didn't have nothing to do with anything, but I thought it was interesting because when you in this social construct that Brother Rio was just talking about, can't nobody determine that but you. And if you know the definitions of these particular terms, then not only are you representing yourself, but they can't deny that to you. With that being said, Brother Roz.
Hey, Brother Jenner. Brother Jenner, real quick, though, let me just, here in North Carolina, I found out from my daughter, because it's been over 20-something years since I've had a child, but I found out from my daughter that the mother can put down anything she want to for racial classification on the birth certificate if they so choose. So,
well, with that, Brother Scotty, you, they can, but and brother Thomas has alluded to this once before, that they will put something down for you, and if you don't correct that, then it'll be what they decided.
Yeah, my point though is, I found it refreshing that language that Brother Rio was using was, it was telling you basically that people have a right to self-determination. And this is what I hear from our revolutionary elders and even the ones not with us. You know, self-determination is a human right. And so absolutely. I self-determined to call myself black. Okay? Why do I do that? Because I do know that I'm a descendant of a Cherokee woman, but she ain't the only one in my family tree. You also got some nationality known as Scottish Irish in my tree. So, but then you also have African descendant people. So why do I self-identify as black? So that there's no confusion of who I'm aligning myself with. Okay. I look at black as an ethnic group. Just like in Nigeria. Everybody's black in Nigeria except for the colonizer, but everybody's black in Nigeria. But they also, within that construct, identify with their tribe. Well, my tribe is black people, victims of slavery right here in the United States. And so I choose to identify as black. Not because somebody told me I'm black, because I choose that designation.
Respect.
Understood.
Hey, can I say one more thing, too, please, real quick?
Absolutely. Go ahead, brother.
And I totally agree with Scotty, man. I that's my problem with the Moors. Listen, I'm black. That's what I am. You know what I mean? But if you look up the racial constructs, they all come from a science called eugenics, and European eugenics in the late 1700s, early 1800s, went through. That it's called Out of Africa theory. It's also called theory of evolution. But if you look that up, you'll come up with how they came up. I mean, they went through measuring
noses and teeth and all types of things to come up with what they consider racial classifications. And the last thing I wanted to add is it's great to have a Black's Law dictionary. That's perfect. But when you're dealing with the law, when I worked in the legal law library, we updated that every day. They didn't stay in the old law. They kept it modern. Like, I might have to pull out 100 books just to change 2 pages in each book where they change 2 words. But that's the new law. That, you know, that, so it's always updated. And I'm mute my line. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. Thank you, Brother Rise. We have about 5 minutes, yo. Well, about 8. We got about 8 minutes. I know we've been kind of running over you, man. I'm going to hit later on, but, you know, we'll deal with that when we deal with it.
The conversation was well worth it. Go ahead.
Get what you got out of it, and then give us our prayer so we can get on up out of here, brother.
Well, I think everybody kind of put everything in proper perspective as far as the subject matter. I just think there's work to do as far as protecting the interests of indigenous Black Americans here. Like, that's like of the utmost importance. And whatever laws are written into the books that are supposed to provide reparations to melanated people here should be so specific that there can be no intrusion. That's been, I think, a major issue, is that you know, we've always been people in this part of the world to always align ourselves with everyone else, and everyone else literally piggybacks off of the struggle of Black Americans in order to get their rights. And then once they get whatever rights they get at our expense, they forget us. That's how it's always been. And to me, like, the racism, white supremacy is in the DNA of these reparations. That's why they've systematically been able to keep indigenous people out and allow all these other people to get these benefits. And it's not the fault of those indigenous people, because they did not control those reparations. They did not write those laws. These were things that they fought for, but still there was a meeting of the minds on a compromise for that particular law to go into effect. And in most cases, I'm sure those indigenous people weren't aware that, you know, these white people got many, many layers and ways of using these even reparations as a means to practice white supremacy. And that, to me, just takes me back to Dr. John Henry Clark, when he always talked about the victim defining their freedom, the victim defining reparations for themselves and actually taking it, rather than going into any compromise situation with the enemy. Because it's not a mistake. It's just everyone was victims of slavery, victims of white supremacy, doing the best that they could. So it's not an anti-Black observation. Is just an observation that now that we've seen how these different things are playing out and have played out for quite a long time, anything that we get into in the future would have to have those checks and balances to completely buffer out anyone else but indigenous melanated people. That's my final thought on it. And with that, we're going to get ready to roll up out of here so that Scotty can get prepared for his show. Let's jump into the prayer and then we'll close out. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time that we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice ASAP. I am in the love of the all, and all love is in me. I am a part of the all, and the all is a part of me. I am one with the all, and the all is one with me. I can succeed as a part of the all and fail as an individual. I can be all that I wish in the all, as long as my wish is to stay in the all. I am never alone. The all is, I am. The all can, I can. The all does, I do. Thanks again for spending your Tuesday evening with us on Tando Radio Show. Peace to Brother Dave. I hope all is well with you, and look forward to hearing you tomorrow. Thanks again to Brother Scotty as well, to Thomas, Otis, Rob, oh my goodness, everybody who called in, thank you so much. Everyone who was listening, thanks for spending your Tuesday evening with us. Peace and love, and we'll talk to you again soon. Good night.
Gould Dinar would have had serious consequences
for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa.
Oh, no problem, brothers. Thank you for filling in on short notice. At all costs. We're slicing
cake. Great work, gentlemen. Great work.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the U.S. wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the U.S. wants to avoid at all costs. Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya has 144 tons of gold. It's happened before. In 2000, Saddam Hussein announced Iraqi oil would be traded in euros, not dollars. Sanctions and an invasion followed. Some say because the Americans were desperate to prevent OPEC from transferring oil trading in all its member countries to the euro.